This is Movies for the Blind, episode 177, The Fat Man, part 2 of 2.
I suppose it would have made more sense if he'd tried to kill you, huh?
Yes, that's what he should have done.
Oh, that's just peachy.
Hello and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. We're back with The Fat Man, and right now, the guy said Fat Man is looking for was an early role for one of the great movie stars. Rock Hudson would have to wait 3 more years for his career to take off in Magnificent Obsession. He went on to star with Elizabeth Taylor and James Dean in Giant, a string of comedies with Doris Day, and, for folks of my generation, played Susan St. James' husband in the detective TV series McMillan and Wife. He stunned everyone in the 80s with the announcement he had HIV/AIDS, forcing everyone who had turned away from anyone with the disease to pay attention and try to understand. Though he succumbed in 1985, he helped set off a wave of support, fundraising, research, and education that continues on today, improving and saving the lives of millions. Strangely, Rock's real first name was Roy, which is his character's name in this film. Actually, at the end of the last episode, we learned the cops knew him as Ray when he was caught and imprisoned for his part in a heist. Detective Brad Runyon is trying to find Roy because a dentist who worked on his teeth has been murdered with Roy's dental x-rays stolen. Brad got a photo from Roy's new wife, Pat, which has led him to being identified as Ray Shevlin, and now he's off to talk to his cellmate in jail before they were released in the conclusion of The Fat Man. Later, a taxi pulls up outside the Greek Theater. A sign announcing its summer season says the production now playing is called Stop Clowning. Out of the taxi, Brad pays the driver. Then he turns away and looks up at the sign. Walking past a man sweeping the wide sidewalk, he approaches two towering open doors. He walks through them and down a hall, glancing at large storage crates. He enters the amphitheater with its long benches, then walks toward the stage, where workmen are moving scenery. Brad steps on stage, toward a blackboard sitting on an easel. It reads, "All clowns in costume and makeup, rehearsal 2:30 downstairs." In a dressing room, a clown finishes white face makeup with exaggerated lips. Another beside him, dressed as a policeman, powders his white face. A bearded one brushes a tuft of hair on the side of his head. Another in a pointy hat warms up a hand puppet. Two more put on their finishing touches as Brad enters and looks over all of them in their long mirror. The policeman turns to the first one.
Come on, let's go.
The bearded one gets the policeman to stand.
Hi.
Good luck.
And all but the first one file out.
Hello, boys.
Oh, hi.
Which one of you characters is this Ed Dietz?
They point to the first one.
He is.
Oh, hello, Ed.
The other clowns leave.
My name's Runyon. I'm a detective.
Well, now what?
It's all right, Ed. I just wanted to find out something about your old roommate upstate.
You mean Ray Shevlin?
Yeah. I think he's in trouble, and you may be able to help him.
Sure. Sit down, Mr. Runyon.
He does.
Thanks.
All I can say is that he was a nice kid.
He feel the same way about you?
He had no other choice. We were stuck with each other for almost 6 years. Hadn't it been for me telling him jokes, going through my routines, he'd have never made it. The first time he opened up was the night we were giving a show for the boys.
He remembers.
Ray was in the wings, helping out with the lights.
In his clown makeup, Ed balances a feather on his nose while juggling. He misses a ball. And as it rolls away, he kneels down, still balancing the feather, and feels around for it. When he can't find it, he looks down with the feather stuck to his nose. In the wings, a man in blackface smiles with Roy. Gathering the balls, disappointed, Ed stands and takes off the feather with a sad face. puts his things into a pocket of his baggy pants held up by suspenders. From the other pocket, he pulls out a bouquet and smells the flowers. From the first pocket, he gets a salt shaker and sprinkles some on the flowers. He licks the shaker and sprinkles some on his tongue. Picking a flower petal, he eats it, then eats another, and another. Roy laughs as Ed keeps delicately eating flower petals, then pulls a whole flower and munches it. Ed rolls his eyes and nods in satisfaction. Swallowing. He puts the stem in his mouth, takes it out, considering, then puts it in sideways and munches it up. He bites it, looks at the end, and drops it. He looks at the other flowers, then bends down in a deep bow. Holding up his little hat, he walks toward the wings as the man in blackface comes on, sharing a bow. Ed goes on to Roy.
You were great, Ed. Just great.
Thanks, Ray. You should have seen me on the circus.
I will someday.
Accepting a cigarette from Roy, Ed joins him sitting at the lighting board.
And when you do, be smart. Stick to the straight and narrow.
I won't have to take chances anymore.
Roy lights the smoke.
I'll be eating off the fat of the land. My pals will see to that.
Pals? They're no pals of yours.
It's coming to me. They'll have my cut waiting when I get out. Maybe even more. They're smart operators.
Yeah, smart enough to let you take the rap.
It was worth it.
6 years off your life?
It wasn't their fault things went wrong with the caper. We had it figured down to the last detail.
Roy remembers.
Even where our driver was going to develop engine trouble.
An armored truck pulls off an isolated mountain road. Two guards get out.
I told him to fix that carburetor.
As one opens the hood, another goes to the back and unlocks the door.
Joe,
yeah?
Hand me the toolkit.
A guard in the back does.
What's the matter?
Carburetor trouble.
As the first guard leaves, two guards step out of the back.
Oscar, give me a cigarette, will you?
The second guard is bent over working on the truck, putting down the toolbox behind him. The first guard looks back to where Gordon, Stevens, and Roy wear guard uniforms behind a bush. The first guard raises his gun and knocks out the second one. The gang heads for the guards behind the truck as the first drags the second back and loads him into the passenger seat. With the back guards knocked out, Gordon and Stevens lift one of them for Roy to pull into the back. The first guard closes the hood and hurries to get into the driver's seat. The others load the other guard into the back, and Gordon and Stevens climb in with Roy. The truck turns off down a side road and away. Later in a barn, Gordon finishes changing into a guard's full uniform with gun while the others tie up the unconscious guards as a radio plays.
Furlong, 440 to place, $3 to show.
Gordon checks his watch as they head for the truck.
309. Let's step on it. We've got 3 minutes to make up.
Gordon joins Stevens in the back, and Roy gets into the passenger seat with the first guard driving. The truck pulls out of the barn and past a farm gate. Later, at a large racetrack, the truck pulls up to a security checkpoint. Two officers approach the front, while Gordon and Stevens wait in the back. An officer gets the first guard to open his door.
Where's Mike?
Oh, they shuffled all the crews around again. Some more of that safety stuff.
He peers at Roy and nods.
Okay.
Then closes the door. Soon after, the truck drives into a loading area watched by a few officers. When it pulls into an alcove to turn around, one of the officers presses a button, alerting another inside where the money is to press another button, which causes a door to open out and lower as the truck backs up to meet it. Roy and the first guard get out and go to the back.
Hi, Ralph. Who's holding?
Gordon and Stevens step out the back.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Fletch.
They all stand at the door as Tim goes into the room and another officer steps into the doorway, looking at Fletch's crew.
New crew?
Right, Mac, breaking the boys in.
That's funny. They never called us about a change in crews. I'll have to check. Hold the load, Tim. Oh, Fred.
The crew looks at each other as Fred approaches.
call the armored truck outfit. Get an official verification of a new crew.
Will do.
He walks off.
Regulations, you understand?
Roy follows Fred to a phone around a corner.
All right, so they can check us. Here's mine.
There's a gun in your back. Don't turn around and do as I say.
As he whispers to him, Gordon almost pulls a gun as Ralph starts over.
Ralph!
But Fletch gets him to turn and walk toward him.
What's the delay? We gotta get moving.
Take it easy, Fletch. We're just checking, that's all.
Ralph steps past them as Fred hangs up.
Start walking and tell him everything checks.
They head back.
Everything checks. New crew sent out.
All right, Jim, start loading.
Okay, Mac.
Three other men help them move trunks of money out onto the door. Gordon and Stevens move them into the truck as Fletch supervises. Still standing close behind Fred, Roy watches. When the last trunk is loaded, a man with a clipboard steps out and down.
Okay, Fletch, it's all yours. Take it away.
Fletch signs and the door goes up.
Before I sign my life away.
Don't worry, it's only money.
The man looks around at the crew staring back at him. Then takes back the clipboard.
Where's Mike? Oh, they shuffled the crews again.
How can that be? He phoned me less than an hour ago. He was on his way down here. Said he was going to bring me some tobacco.
When he runs, Fletch knocks him down. Fred shoves Roy aside and shoots Fletch. Then rings an alarm. The rest of the crew runs to the truck, but Roy is shot in the leg. As officers hurry out, the truck speeds away with shots fired after it. Guards at the checkpoint run into action, and two hurry to close a gate. At top speed, the truck hurtles toward the gate. Men run out of the way, and the truck crashes through. With Brad, Ed.
They got away with over $500,000. But Ray didn't get very far, not with a slug in his leg.
Did he ever mention their names?
That much he didn't trust me. I got out before Ray did. Haven't seen him since.
A man enters.
How about it? You coming or not?
Coming, Max.
Okay.
Ed stands.
Well, gotta go make some people laugh.
Do you think something could have happened to Ray?
I can think of a half a million reasons why something could have happened to Ray.
Ed leaves as Brad gets up. Later at the hotel suite, Pat carries out a dish as Bill holds a pie.
You asked me. You took it out of the oven too soon.
No one's asking you. This time I'm the chef.
Well, I was only trying to help.
Bill uncovers and smells it.
Well?
Covering it again, he points at the pie.
Too much crust.
That's the way we do it back home.
They turn to the door as Brad enters.
Hi, boss.
Hi, Bill.
He puts down his hat.
Well, Pat?
She uncovers the dish.
Specialty of the house. I thought I'd show you the way we do it out here.
Mmm, looks swell.
Tastes even better. Suppose you wash up if you're going to... You find out something?
Amateur night, boss. I figured we ought to give some new talent a break.
He nods for Bill to leave.
Excuse me,
And he does.
What did you find out?
Time enough later.
Now, Brad.
He sits on the arm of a chair.
It's about Roy, isn't it?
It's not good news, sweetheart.
She approaches him.
Give it to me straight. You promised.
All right. I think his pals got rid of him.
No.
Everything points to it.
But why? Why?
She steps away and he stands.
What difference would it make to know why? They had reasons.
She sits on the couch, turned away. And Brad steps around to her.
Go on back home to your people, Pat.
I can't.
Sure you can. I'll keep at it until I know without a doubt. It's the best thing, Pat. If Roy's alive, he'll come to you.
All right, Brad. If you say so.
Taking her coat and purse, she gets up.
I guess I just don't rate being happy.
Sure you do.
Forget it. Just wasn't in the cards. Your food's getting cold.
She heads for the door. Then turns back.
Let me know when you find out who did it.
So long, Pat.
She opens the door and leaves. Later at Gordon's.
Why'd you wait all this time?
Stevens meets with him.
You could have called me down from Las Vegas before this.
Two reasons. One, I didn't know how far Runny would get. And two, phones can be tapped.
We've come a long way, Gene. We're legit. Why should anyone want to tap our phones?
He's still a hooligan, Happy. Right underneath that $200 suit. All muscle and no brain.
Okay, so I'm a hooligan. But that fat bozo's getting in our hair. It calls for a little muscle.
Only if we have to.
How long are we gonna wait?
That depends on Jane Addams and what she has to say.
Okay.
Setting down a drink, Stevens goes to a door and leaves. At night, at 10:08, a shadow falls on a sidewalk and a man walks. He steps into the large lobby of a hotel. The man who killed Dr. Bromley crosses the empty lobby. He passes a doorman on his way to the elevators, then steps into one. Soon after, it opens, and he steps into a hall, looking around. Wearing gloves, he goes to room 68 and opens it with a key. He closes the door of Brad's dark suite, walks through it to a bedroom and peeks inside. Turning, he walks behind the couch and bumps into something. He moves on, then slows. He steps to a pair of French doors and opens them to the kitchenette, then closes them. Meanwhile, Jane steps out of a taxi and pays the driver. She walks away and through the lobby. She picks up a phone.
Mr. Runyon, suite, please. Mr. Runyon, I've got to see you right away. I know who killed Dr. Bromley.
The killer is on the other end.
Come up.
He hangs up and steps away from the phone to the door. He waits behind it, pulling out a length of rope. Jane steps out from the elevator and heads for room 68. The door opens, and she goes inside. The door closes. Soon after, the killer steps back into the lobby, but spots Brad coming. So does the doorman.
Oh, Mr. Runyon.
Yes, Dave.
Bill wanted me to tell you he's out hunting up some new places to eat.
It's a big deal.
They smile and Brad walks on. Later, he's waiting in Stark's office when the lieutenant enters.
It's death due to strangulation. But why did he want to kill her?
Same reason the doc was killed.
Do you want to see her?
No, thanks. The body I want to see is Roy Clark's.
Well, you forget we're not looking for Clark out here.
You are now. If he was picked up unidentified, missing persons would handle it.
They head for missing persons, where a man checks records.
No record on Roy Clark or Shevlin.
You ever figure he may not be dead?
I figure everything until I know for sure. Let's see, Roy disappeared on April 20th, on a Thursday. How many bodies were brought in between the 20th and 23rd?
April 23rd.
He pulls out a file.
Five.
How many were identified?
Three.
Give me a rundown on the other two.
One female, suicide. One male, truck smash-up, burned beyond recognition.
Any medical report?
Well, the man was over 6 feet tall, had dark hair.
Say, Clark had dark hair, and he was about that size, too.
So am I. My hair is dark.
Now, here's an interesting note. The truck was stolen from U.S. Trucking Company.
Oh, that's great. Now Clark steals himself a truck and sets himself on fire. Look, I've got a desk full of work. Let me know when you hit on a better idea.
I'll do just that, sweetheart.
Stark leaves. Later in a store, Brad and Bill consider a toy truck with a wooden open bed.
This looks like a nice one.
Just peachy. Don't you feel well?
Never felt better.
Yes, sir.
I'll take this one.
Now, this is the favorite with little boys.
She gets a car.
Well, I'm a big boy, madam. I'll take this one.
Very well. But the other one has real headlights.
She takes the truck away.
Well, so you got yourself a truck. Now, what are you going to do with your toy?
Play.
Later, it sits on a table.
Exhibits A, B, C, D, and E.
In Stark's office.
One wooden toy truck, several sheets of paper, a toothpick, a match, and a highly combustible lighter fluid. Everything is here.
Everything but the man in the white coat and the straitjacket.
But there's a method to my madness. Observe. Here we have a truck. The sort of a truck in which Mr. Roy Clark met his death. And here...
He crumples up a couple sheets of paper and drops them in the bed.
Cargo that the truck carried.
Bill shakes his head as Stark and another detective watch.
And here... Oh.
He takes something hanging from the detective's vest.
May I? One elk's tooth.
Dropping it in the bed, he pours in lighter fluid and sets it down, then lights the match and drops it in,
hey!
Starting a fire in the bed. Stark calms himself as they watch it burn down to the bottom of the bed.
And that, gentlemen, is how Roy Clark perished. And this...
He uses a pencil to pick out the elk's tooth and move it onto a card.
This is the reason why Dr. Bromley and the nurse were killed. Roy Clark's teeth, the one thing fire can't destroy.
Oh, it's been a tough day, Brad. See if you can take it slowly.
All right, then.
Put them down.
From the beginning. The minute Clark was sprung, he made a beeline for his pals to demand his share of the loot. They figured it was cheaper to kill him and eliminate the one person who could finger them for the job. Reasonable?
Sounds reasonable.
Thank you. But a phone call from a Dr. Bromley threw them for a loop. It seems he had taken x-rays of Roy's teeth, and such x-rays could identify Clark, as you know.
Yes, well, go on.
So they broke into the doctor's office, cleaned house, and then followed him to New York, where they got the other x-ray and knocked off the doc, thus eliminating the last connection with Roy's murder.
Well, why kill the doctor? They had already destroyed the x-rays.
Because the doctor could identify his own work on Clark. And as for Jane, she must have seen the killer back east and then recognized him out here. Now, do you find any holes in that chain of events?
Holes? No. But there's no evidence either.
That's right. No evidence yet. Later, Lieutenant, later. Come on, Bill. We're going over to U.S. Trucking.
Right, boss.
In an office adjoining a garage.
Sure, I remember the truck in question. 2-ton job, 8 years old.
Who'd want to steal a jalopy like that?
It was a honey. Just had it repainted.
The driver around?
Sure, he's always around. I'm stuck with him like taxes. Pinky? Pinky!
Yeah, all right. What do you want?
Pinky walks in and crosses his arms.
My brethren, though.
How do you do?
Hi.
Mr. Runyon here is investigating the case. He wants a rundown on that stolen truck.
Yeah, how did it happen, Peggy?
Right outside the job. How do you like that for nerve? I'm just finishing off a load. Working hard, you understand?
Yeah, well...
I lugged this trunk out of the house. Heavy it was, too. Near, give me a strain. I get it up on the truck and cover it over, neat-like. And then I go back into the house for the next load. That's all, brother.
That's all, brother, you stupid 2-ton job. Just repainted?
And me standing there with egg on my face.
Only to my brother-in-law these things happen.
What's the matter?
Oh.
I got immunity or something?
Where was the truck picked up?
North Hollywood, 2 hours later. When I think of what the guy looked like behind the wheel.
It burned. Burned like a marshmallow. You can imagine how my sister felt till she knew it wasn't Pinky.
I'm not sure she wasn't disappointed.
You got no right to talk like that about Frieda.
I got no right? It's my wife, so I got a right?
Right.
What was in the truck?
Nothing.
Nothing.
That's just it. Nothing worth stealing. If you ask me, that crook was nutty like a fruitcake.
Theatrical costumes. Three trunks full, belonging to a fella named Dietz.
Dietz?
Yeah.
Ed Dietz?
That's the guy. He's in a show over to the Greek Theater on Los Feliz.
Back at the theater.
Ed Dietz ain't been around for over a week now. Just didn't show up for rehearsal one day.
Did you check his home?
Yep. The Alicott Hotel on Ventura Boulevard. Went there myself. He just moved out without saying where.
Well, thanks, Pop.
Brad walks away. And meets Bill outside the stage entrance.
Well?
Gone. Disappeared. Banished.
Well, what's your guess?
I don't know.
You figure Dietz just walked off or was taken off?
That's the question.
A bullet hits the door beside Brad. They look back. At the convertible with the roof up, pulling away.
It was Gordon's car.
Correct, William. Looks like he doesn't want us to find Dietz.
Say, I can catch that monkey.
Relax, relax. We know where he's going.
They walk away from the theater. Later, they pull up to Gordon's estate. Bill sets the brake.
I'm forgetting Stark down here now, boss.
And spoil our little experiment?
Still better than having your face spoiled.
You worry too much, Bill.
Well, why wouldn't I worry? You going in there to accuse Gordon and his partner of murder, they'll never let you out of there alive.
In which event, we'll know we're on the right track.
Sure, that makes it all worthwhile.
Okay, if I'm not out in 30 minutes, you can call Stark.
Brad gets out of the car as Bill rubs his chin nervously. Brad steps up to the front door and rings the doorbell. Tony opens the door and freezes.
Hello, Tony.
How are you, Mr. Runyon?
Lucky, I'd say.
He steps past him inside, and Tony shuts the door.
Lucky you're such a bad shot.
Are you talking in riddles again?
I don't think so. Someone's been taking pot shots at me from a dark convertible like you drive.
Now, what would I want to do that for?
Lots of reasons. Maybe you want to shut me up. Or maybe you're just taking orders.
You got nothing on me, fat man.
Another door opens, and Gordon steps out from his den.
Why, hello, Runyon. This is an unexpected pleasure.
Unexpected for sure, but I doubt if it'll be any pleasure.
Come on in.
Brad goes in, with Gordon following.
Have a drink?
No.
He closes the door.
Why the chip on your shoulder?
Skip it.
All right. Did you find Roy yet?
Frankly, Gordon, I don't think I'll ever find Roy.
Why not?
It's just a hunch.
Gordon sits.
You don't know Roy like I do.
Done a lot of checking since I was here last. All roads lead to you.
So what? I told you Roy came to me after he got out?
You also told me that you gave him a stake and he disappeared on his own.
I don't like playing cat and mouse, Runyon.
Suppose I tell you what I think happened when Roy came back here.
As Brad smokes, he imagines Roy smoking in Gordon's den.
Even a cigarette tastes better on the outside.
He gets up, joining Stevens and Gordon.
Well, listen, that is the way it's going to be from now on. Right, Happy?
Right.
He slaps his back.
You know, that's all I kept thinking about for 6 years. Getting out and getting my hands on my share of the dough. I bet. It's time I live like this. How much does it come to, anyway? Almost 200 grand. That makes it worthwhile. Come on, pal, my dough. Get him. He thinks we keep that kind of dough sitting around here. Here, on account.
He counts out a handful of money and gives him some.
Buy yourself some clothes and have some fun. My chauffeur will take you around wherever you want to go. Thanks, G. Be seeing you. So long, Roy.
He steps to the door, opens it, and leaves.
Take care of our friend.
Stephen smirks a little and walks away. With Brad.
Of course, there may have been one or two little details that I overlooked.
So you think we knocked off Clark, huh?
Yeah.
You're crazy.
Am I?
Clean through.
Well, let's see what the cops think.
Help yourself.
Gordon stands.
While you're down there, give my regards to Lieutenant Stark.
All playing it big, huh? Okay, sweetheart.
Brad walks out, and Gordon shuts the door. Stevens walks in through another door.
Ambitious guy.
Yeah, too ambitious.
And what happens if Runyon really finds out?
Well, we're all right as long as our friend keeps his mouth shut.
Suppose he don't. Suppose he talks.
Gordon steps to his desk.
Of course, I'm only a hooligan. You're the brains.
Gordon sits.
But I say we take care of him.
Okay.
Opening a drawer, he takes out a pistol. Meanwhile, in Bill's car...
You're awfully quiet, boss.
I don't get it. I just don't get it.
And don't get what?
That rat, Tony, denied shooting at us. Then I threatened Gordon. He lets me walk right out. It doesn't make sense.
I suppose it would have made more sense if he'd tried to kill you, huh?
Yes, that's what he should have done.
Oh, that's just peachy.
Something I missed. I thought I had all the pieces put together. There's one that's not there.
The missing clown?
Sure, Dietz, Ed Dietz. You're right on the ball.
Oh, it's nothing really, boss. Now, where do we find him?
Say, might just be his landlord has an idea. Turn right at the next corner.
Later, the landlord opens an empty room.
See for yourself. Nobody's trying to hold out on you, mister. I tell you, he's gone.
But where? He'd leave a forwarding address, wouldn't he?
You tell me.
Well, what happens if you get mail for him?
It's Uncle Sam's worry. All I know, he called in the moving van when I was out.
Moving van? Thanks.
Brad and Bill go to the trucking company, where Pinky looks through a book.
Last week it was. He came in to give us a job again.
See if you can find the order.
I'm looking. Some brother-in-law I got. My own family makes me sit here all night. Here's the order. To be delivered to the Ed Dietz Circus in Tarzana.
Let me see that.
Who moves at night? Gypsies?
Brad drops the book.
Thanks.
And leaves. As Pinky slumps in the chair with his arms crossed. In the car.
Now, you got everything straight?
Oh, I think so, boss. While you take a look at the circus to see what gives, I find a phone booth, call Shifty, and tell him what you want.
Yeah.
And I call Lieutenant Stark.
Right. Stop over there. I'll get that cab.
Later, Shifty steps out of the hotel elevator carrying a golf bag over his shoulder. He gets his passkey, but before he uses it, the door opens. Bill presses the doorbell. Then he pulls Shifty into the suite.
Did you get it?
Certainly.
Taking off the bag, he unzips it. He pulls out a rifle.
What's it for?
Hunting?
You?
Bill puts it back in.
Don't make me laugh.
Well, I didn't get a marksman's medal in the army for nothing.
There ain't no animals around here.
That's where you're wrong, sweetheart. I'm on my way to the circus.
He carries it out with Shifty following. Outside the circus.
You got everything straight?
A cinch, boss.
See if you can find the window.
With my eyes closed.
He aims at an office wagon.
Great. But keep them open and watch for my signal. When I stand in front of the window, you get ready. It's after I get out of the way, shoot. You got that? After I get out of the way.
After you get out of the way.
Yeah.
Bill aims again. But Brad pulls the gun out of the way so he can walk ahead to the wagon, which says Dietz Circus on it. Brad steps to the office door and knocks. Ed opens it in his makeup.
Oh, Mr. Runyon.
Hello, Ed.
Following me?
Looks like it, doesn't it?
Come on in.
As Brad steps up into the wagon, Ed sits at a dressing room mirror.
Nice little circus you got yourself here, Ed.
Sure, I always wanted one. Just trying out some new makeup for the show.
Sit down while I take off my face.
He sits as Ed dips fingers into cold cream.
How'd you find me?
Luck, Ed. Pure luck. And a little figuring.
Why, something important?
No. Just wanted to keep you up to date on Roy.
Ed turns to the mirror.
Sure, how is he?
Brad smokes slowly.
Dead.
No. How'd it happen?
Well, it seems Roy had a friend. This friend needed money. And he had an idea how to get some.
Back then.
You got Roy's share of the caper. I want a cut of it or I tip the cops.
Stevens reaches for a gun.
Don't try that. You don't think I'd just walk in here without any protection, do you?
All right. Suppose we give it to you. What happens when Roy gets out?
That little detail you just leave to me. All part of the deal.
I still think he's bluffing.
Am I? If anything happens to me, the cops get a letter telling them everything.
Smart boy.
Right. Now, you get about 200 grand, do Roy? All I want is 50 of it. That still leaves you a nice little bonus.
At the mirror, Ed removes his makeup and reveals he's the killer.
How about this friend? Did he get the money?
Yeah. Yeah, he got it all right. And he also took care of Roy, just like he promised.
Ed turns to him.
How?
Well, he probably asked Roy over to his house one afternoon, knocked him out, and got him into a trunk.
Like one beside Brad.
Then, in order to get rid of the body, he called in a moving van to pick up the trunk. Diverted the driver, stole the truck, and burned it to cremate the body.
Ed stands with a pistol.
You figured good. Did you also figure that nothing would stand in the way of me getting that money? There was a chance for me to have a circus of my own? All my life, that's what I've been after.
So you go on killing?
Nobody's that smart. Nobody. I planned every detail. Then someone like you comes along and throws everything out of gear.
Now take it easy. You're sick, Ed. But nobody's going to let up on you. Me, the cops, Gordon or Stevens.
They wouldn't talk.
Brad stands.
Stop, Ed.
And backs toward a window.
You're the one they're afraid of. They're afraid you'll give them away.
Outside, Bill aims. But is knocked out.
They're gunning for you right now.
Don't take another step.
With Gordon, Stevens holds the rifle.
I can help you, Ed, but you gotta help me. Get moving.
Brad steps forward and Stevens' shot just misses him. He and Ed go down in the dark.
Now do you believe me, Deets?
Ed sneaks to the window.
Your little pals are out there and they're gonna kill you.
He peeks out. And Stevens fires again, making him duck.
They are out there. If you play ball, Ed, I can help you. I'll cover them from this window. You go out through that door.
You'll help me with the cops?
I'll do what I can, Ed. You're sick. The cops will listen to me.
He pulls a gun.
Head for the other wagon and wait there.
Brad fires out the window as Ed creeps away. Gordon fires as Ed runs behind a giant weight and shoots Stevens, who collapses. Ed runs for the tent, and Gordon runs after him. Outside the wagon, Brad shoots the gun from Gordon's hand, then runs at him and knocks him out. Bill comes to and stands.
Take care of this one, Bill.
With pleasure, boss.
He takes Gordon's gun as Brad approaches the tent. He peeks in at the empty bleachers in center ring. He backs out. Ed sneaks through a VIP box.
Deets, you haven't got a chance.
He shoots toward Brad, who ducks away again. Jumping down from the box, Ed looks around. As a police car arrives with Bill keeping a gun on Gordon, who comes too. Stark gets out with a couple detectives.
You should have let me know sooner.
I wasn't sure it was going to pay off.
He points at Gordon.
There's one of them for you.
See to it.
Stark and one colleague head for the tent.
Hey, wait a minute. That guy's going crazy in there. We better move in from different sides.
Okay.
Armed, they start around the tent. Inside, Ed turns to a rope ladder and starts climbing. The detective sneaks along a tent wall, then bends down and steps under it. As Ed keeps climbing, Brad watches from his same position, and Stark bends down under another tent wall. Ed gets up to a high platform. Brad looks in and up. On the platform, Ed looks around. Stark looks up through some bleachers, watching Ed. Brad takes a step inside as Ed turns around restlessly.
Don't be a fool, Deets!
Confused where he is, Ed shoots behind him.
Put down that gun!
He fires again in another direction.
Give yourself up, Deets!
He fires again wildly, As the detectives converge, Brad finds a switchbox and lights up the center ring below Ed. He blinks painfully. He stands far above Annette.
Your last chance, Ed!
Squinting, he fires down. And one of the cops fires up. Hit in the chest. He falls off the platform and into the net. He struggles to the edge. And rolls off it onto the ground at Brad's feet. Climbing onto his knees, Ed holds dirt and sawdust in his hands.
All my life, I've wanted a circus of my own.
He looks up.
Even killed to get it.
He dies. Later in the suite, Brad eats, Stark yawns, and Bill holds an ice pack to his head, drinking milk.
You know, boss, these California cows don't seem to put their heart in their work.
Sure you won't have some coffee?
Thanks, I still have some cleaning up to do at headquarters.
Stark gets up.
I should have been a fireman. More time to sleep.
The door opens, and Shifty steps in.
Hey, you!
Stark chases him out.
How's that hotel cooking, boss?
It's murder. Just murder.
He laughs. The end. This described version of The Fat Man was produced for Movies for the Blind. The players: Brad Runyon, J. Scott Smart, Pat, Julie London, Roy, Rock Hudson, Bill, Clinton Sundberg, Jane Meadows, Gordon, John Russell, Stark, Jerome Cowan, Ed, Emmett Kelly. And that was The Fat Man. This film's clever twist capitalized on the fact that Emmett Kelly, one of the most famous circus clowns of all time, was hiding in plain sight without his clown makeup. He'd never been seen without it in public. The filmmakers had wanted him to wear the makeup of the clown character he was known for, Weary Willie, the sad hobo with the perpetual stubble always trying to sweep the spotlight on the ground. But Kelly refused and came up with a new makeup design for Ed. That may have been because of ownership of the image, or just because he didn't want his famous character, beloved by so many children, to be associated with a killer, even in a movie. Gonna take a week off now, but after that, I think we're gonna go for something spooky. I'll have details next week. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, go to the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. Also, check out the Movies for the Blind page on Facebook and the channel on YouTube. The MP3s are hosted by Blind File Sharing, with easy, affordable, and accessible file storage and transfer with visually impaired users in mind. To find out more, visit blindfilesharing.com. And the movies are from the Internet Archive, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back in 2 weeks. Take care.